Welcome back here to the Mark Steiner Show. We are joined here in studio by Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of American Studies at UMBC, co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, The Critical Articulations of Black Hair, My Body Politics in Africana Communities, Jack Pennell, who is founder of the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys at Baltimore City Public Charter School, scheduled to open in 2015. The Kimberly Moffitt is on the board of. David Banks is joining us by phone, educator, president, and CEO of the Eagle Academy Foundation, founding principal of the Eagle Academy for Young Men in the Bronx in New York City, and author of SOAR, How Boys Learn, Succeed, and Develop Character. And we'll be signing his book today in Baltimore tonight. Wednesday night, this is October the 8th today at 6 p.m. at the Frederick Douglass Isaac Myers Maritime Museum. We'll talk more about that later in the program. Let me welcome the three of you to the Mark Steiner Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And you all, please join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Throw a comment on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, 410-319-8888. As we look at the state of young black men in our educational system, Frederick Douglass always said, and I'm going to butcher this quote, but maybe my guests can resurrect the quote from me, butchering it, that it is easier to teach a young man than to reform him later in the life, but a quote along those lines. And when we look at the statistics in America, that one of the latest stats we saw from 2010 is that only 52% of young black men graduated from high school in this country. This is the first time in American history that over 50% of young black men graduated from high school, who started ninth grade 4 years ago. In Maryland, which ranks 24th in the nation, 57% of black men graduated college, as opposed to 81% of white young men graduated from high school, I should say. And that was a 24% gap. So we're going to talk about that gap, what the men and women in this conversation today are doing to change that, and what this says to us. And David Banks, let me begin with you, and I'm glad you're coming to Baltimore tonight, and welcome to the program. I think this is an issue that is really fundamental to the future of America and to our educational system. Let me talk in ways about how you have approached this and what you are saying.
Well, first of all, thanks again, Mark, for having me. You know, we started the Eagle Academy in the Bronx more than 10 years ago. And we did it specifically for the reasons that you just pointed out. There's this crisis of young men who are not even graduating from high school, much less making themselves ready for careers and post-secondary opportunities. The problem is that so many of us have simply been talking about the issue. We are analyzing data. We have conferences. But at the end of the day, it seemed like the most you could hope for was a good after-school program for a handful of boys. And so we decided when we did this that we wanted to really begin to make a huge difference. And we've gone now, Mark, from having 100 boys in the ninth grade in the Bronx 10 years ago to today, a model that starts at the sixth grade, and we take our young men all the way through to 12th grade. We're in every single borough in New York City. We're in Newark, New Jersey. We have over 2,000 young men in our schools today. When each school grows to full capacity, we'll be serving over 4,000 young men. So it's significant. We found ways to engage parents in a way that I don't know. You'd be hard-pressed to find any school that engages parents in the way that we do. We recognize how important it was to have mentors in the lives of our boys. You know, 7 out of every 10 of our young men today are growing up without a dad at home. And so
Is that a national figure, 7 out of 10, or New York City?
And that's a national figure. That's a national figure. In 1920, 90% of black kids had a dad at home. 40 years later, in 1960, the number was still as high as 80%. These are national figures, and today the number is just 32%. So you want to point to one indicator of why we're finding so many issues with our boys and our girls. It's the lack of dads being home, and again, it correlates with how many of our men we imprison in this country. We imprison more men in this country than any other nation on the globe, and so it's not a winning strategy. Young people are growing up without their fathers, and so the Eagle Academy has designed a model that tries to stand in the gap by having mentors. We've got teachers who are trained in how to work with boys. Very often, a lot of our teachers misdiagnose what they see in terms of the behavior that they see from boys in schools, and they think that our boys are bad or they just don't measure up. And so the expectations are very often are not high. So teachers have got to be retrained. And what it means to work with boys and understanding that the energy of boys is not that they're bad or that they don't have great potential, but you just have to understand what that means and how to work with it. And that's something we've become very good at the Eagle Academy, amongst other things. You know, we have our boys in school for a longer school day. We bring them in on Saturdays. They wear uniforms. We have a level of discipline. But the discipline is to teach, not to punish. And ultimately, everything that we're doing, Mark, is designed to help the light to come on. Because when the light comes on and these young men recognize who they are and the potential that they have, they transform themselves and they move toward their own brilliant potential.
So let me bring this here home here in the studio here for a moment. Jack Pinnell is with us, a founder of the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys, and Dr. Kimberly Bonfit, who is on the board and one of the founders of the school as well. And Kimberly, let me start with you, just because you and I have talked about this for the last period of time as you've been developing this idea and trying to create this school, and you have your own young men in your home. And so talk about, I'd like to talk from your perspective why it's important. Why is it important to start an institution that is primarily for young men, is for young men, and primarily for young black men?
Coming from the parent perspective, I can say that I saw an experience, and I've talked about this on the air before, the whole idea of Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu's concept of fourth grade failure syndrome, where he says there's this shift that happens, in particular for African-American boys in a school setting. And although I felt like I had placed all of the right things in position for my son to be successful in school, one of the things that I noticed during that year for him is a decline in his interest in school. And even I remember having a conversation with him when he was testing for Hopkins Center for Talented Youth program. And we had this conversation where I wanted him to review what might possibly show up on the exam. And he looked at me, mother who is a professor and believes there's nothing much more significant than academics. He looked at me and he said, Mom, he said, if I have to choose between basketball and academics, basketball will win every time. And I thought, this can't be my child, first of all.
Not my child.
But then it hit me that I was experiencing exactly what this whole concept was about, and that I needed to do something different to make sure that the light, as David was saying, does come on and stays on so that he understands his brilliance and what he can do with that in the future.
So it seems to me in some ways, Jack Pinnell, it begs a question. I mean, is it a question of young boys in the fourth grade? It's a question of young black boys in the fourth grade. And if we're talking about Dr. Kimberly Moffitt's children, who are children of a middle class family and children of inner city families, where does this divide?
Well, first I want to say thank you to David Banks, because he actually inspired this ideal of the school. Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys will start at fourth grade. And I think that's based on the experience of schools like Eagle Academy, Urban Prep in Chicago, that started at middle school and higher, that they all said to me, if I were starting at school today, I would start at a lower grade. And many families have said, well, why aren't you starting at kindergarten? But we're starting specifically at fourth grade because there's one sad fact, Mark, in this city, is that 90% of black boys in Baltimore City in fourth grade are not reading at a grade level. And fourth grade is that turning point, at least educationally, that if you're not reading at grade level, you're not reading to learn. And this is one of the indicators of why our boys are falling behind. This is when they tend to do fairly well, I'm talking about black and Latino boys, to about third grade, as most kids do, mm-hmm. in our urban schools. But about fourth grade, it's a cliff. And that cliff continues to get wider, or that gap continues to begin. That's when the gap begins. So go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
So we really wanted to begin with fourth grade. It's also in the age where boys are 8 or 9 years old. And I think that we can do what David said, is to use discipline as teaching, not as punishment. And I think it's a great moment of formation. They're still boys. They still have an identity of being a young boy, but they're also on on the brink of maturing, on the brink of coming of age a bit through middle school. So we found this to be a great entry point.
So I want to really kind of delve really deeply into this for a moment. I mean, what are we saying on the factors here, external and internal? External to the in terms of the world we had. Bob Sommerman, I'm pointing this chair because he sat in that chair last time I was on the show, and we had a conversation about this. One of the things Bob Sommerman said as a former teacher, he said, you know, we have all these programs and putting all this money into stuff and all these great ideas. He said, but we are not teaching teachers how to teach young black kids in our communities. What does that mean? What is the disconnect here?
And I think, again, going back to the whole concept of the fourth grade failure syndrome, one aspect of that talks about the fact that we've got, you know, 80%+ of the public school teachers in across the nation, not just in Baltimore City, but across the nation, who are white middle class women, who are coming from a particular framework or perspective of how they view the world, but they are also coming from a particular place in which by that time, by that age of 9, even approaching 10, there's a shift in the teachers in terms of how they are receiving our young men, how they look upon our young men. And so they're not the cute little Johnny that we saw running around the school in kindergarten that we thought was so adorable and was glad to be in the classroom. They now are being seen very much as menaces to our society because they might be the ones who are very disruptive in the classroom. They might be the ones that we worry about whether or not they are going to take something from our office desk when we step out of the classroom. So we see these young boys very differently in ways. I mean, I think it's very similar to the conversation we had last week about black children and innocence of childhood, right? Where around that age, we strip young black boys of this whole idea of still embracing the innocence of childhood, and we see them as almost mini adults. And that in itself influences how you choose to educate, how you choose to teach or not teach.
David, go ahead before we go to break.
That is so correct. I couldn't have said it any better. Listen, one of the stories I tell in the book, in fact, is how I open up the book, is talking about the story of my brother. My mom and dad raised three sons in New York City. I'm the oldest of three. My brother is less than a year younger than me. We were in the same grade our entire lives. I did well in school, like school. Philip was a little bit more of a challenge, and the teachers subsequently did not have that level of expectation for Phil. In fact, they wanted to recommend him to be in special education. They wanted to put him on medication, said he was too hyper. There was absolutely nothing wrong with him. He was just all boy. But just as Dr. Moffitt said, you know, that it's that level of expectation that is born from experiences that many of our teachers are just not used to the Phillips of the world. And so they keep the expectations low, and he suffers as a result of it. Philip was very fortunate. They had a strong mom and dad, and he ultimately graduated and went to college and by the skin of his teeth. But Philip graduated from Lincoln University and joined my father on the New York City Police Department. And today my brother has promoted himself all the way up to the top of the charts. He is the chief of the department, the top four-star chief, the top cop in all of New York. The only person higher than him is the police commissioner. He's the top uniformed police officer. And he is a boy that if you look back when he was a little boy, the teachers would have never predicted that my brother would be responsible for the safety and security of all the New Yorkers in the entire city of New York. But it just goes to show you never know. And all of these young men have brilliance and potential. What we need are our adults to understand what that brilliance and potential really is, how to continue to nurture that, not to lower your expectations. And I think that's really the what we need is for our teachers to be better prepared, and they're not really getting that training anywhere.
So I do. There's three huge things in my mind here that I'd like to wrestle with when we come back from this break. And one is what is an educational strategy that ends the abysmal graduation rate for young black men in our public schools in this country, whether in New York City or Baltimore or San Francisco or Chicago, wherever that is. And does that mean that we have to that young black men should be in a separate institution? Or does it mean young men should be in separate institutions, or is it something larger than that we're missing? And this is a very complex question, and I want to jump into it as soon as we take this brief break. But back with our guests, please join us, 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts, whether you're a teacher, a parent, your own children, your own experiences, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. We'll be right back.
darn proud of you.
Dionne Warwick and the Spinners. Then came You, which is certified gold on this day in 1974. We went out of here with Bob Marley, Ride Natty Ride. On this day in 1980, Marley collapsed on the stage at Pittsburgh Stanley Theater. It was rushed to New York City Hospital, and this was the last stage performance before we lost him to cancer in 1981. Going back to our conversation here, please join us, 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Jacques Pinnell is founder of the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys, a Baltimore City public charter school scheduled to open in 2015. David Banks is an educator, president and CEO of the Eagle Academy Foundation. He'll be in Baltimore tonight speaking about his book, Soar, How Boys Learn, Succeed, and Develop Character. He'll be at 6 o'clock at the Frederick Douglass Isaac Myers Maritime Park Museum, located at 1417 Thames Street and South Caroline Street in historic Fells Point. You can RSVP by email at mjewsdouglasmyers@gmail.com. We're also joined by Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, founding board member of the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys and associate professor of American Studies at UMBC, 410-319-8888. Please join us here. I mean, one of the things we talked about during break, Jack Pinnell said the study shows that we're talking about the 43% of young black men who do not graduate high school. Kimberly was talking about one in three young black men are involved in the criminal justice system.
Or will be sometime
will be
in their
lives. And if you extrapolate out the young men who are living in poor communities, poor working class communities, that number is even larger.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're in as your 43%. So the question is, what is the strategy to address that? I mean, because there are all sorts of concomitant social issues, but you just can't throw your hands up and say, okay, well, there's nothing we can do about it because it's too complex.
That's right.
So we do have to intervene.
We have to intervene, and I think education, a school like Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys, like Eagle Academy, is designed to be a major intervention into this pipeline that's going to prison. It's like, if we don't provide our kids with an opportunity to read well, to write well, to calculate well, to be critical thinkers, to be citizens, to be global citizens, we're likely not to give them an opportunity to be successful in the world of work, successful even in the U.S. military. I mean, if one wanted to go to the U.S. military, there are entrance exams for the U.S. military. And so we're looking at what I said to you, Mark, over the break was that 43%, this is Baltimore City. And my rough calculations, that's about 2,000 men, black and brown boys who turn men at the age of 18 in the city who don't have a high school diploma. And the likelihood of them, it's like a 70% chance that they're going to end up in the criminal justice system. Because without a high school diploma, there's no likelihood of work. There's no likelihood of further education unless you were to get a GED. So I think that what Eagle Academy does very well, and I've seen it up close, is that they really create this sense of expectation. David says that, you know, we never give up on a child. And I see repeatedly, unfortunately, in the city that we do give up on black boys. We particularly give up on black boys. Whether that is conscious or unconscious, we basically write their ticket to a life of dismal failure, and we can change that.
So whether it's the Eagle Academy Foundation and the schools you're creating throughout New York and other places, David Banks, or whether it's here in the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys, is going to be open next fall with its first fourth graders.
Fourth, fifth, and sixth grade.
All at once, yes, coming in, okay.
Yep. Right.
And we'll grow a grade a year.
Gotcha. It's just what I'm saying, but the kids coming in next year will be fourth graders.
Fourth, fifth, and sixth graders.
Oh, that's what I didn't understand.
And then we'll grow a grade a year.
Oh, I see. So you'll then add a seventh grade?
Mm-hmm. Yes, all the way to grade 12.
Gotcha. I'm sorry for my lack of clarity.
Don't worry.
But this is very critical to intervene now.
Yes.
But beyond the intervention of a collegiate school for boys or a Eagle Academy, wherever that may be, that cannot reach all the young men that we're talking about here, all the boys we're talking about here. What has to happen? What is the intervention that needs to take place? You can't have 43% of young black men in Baltimore City and 48% in other cities, whatever that number is in other cities, not graduating school, being on the streets, not having work, confronted by the system, trying to hustle to make a living, going to jail. Something has to change. So what is it? What has to come in to intervene?
First of all, let me say that the president, through his initiative, My Brother's Keeper, is attempting at least to take a closer look at this and figure out what are the key entry points here that we can, in fact, make a difference. Everyone's not going to get a chance to go to Baltimore Collegiate or Eagle Academy or Urban Prep or any of these other great opportunities. The larger system itself has to have a shift. And in my opinion, the biggest change, there's no one thing, let's just be very clear, but there are a series of things that have to happen. But one of the biggest ones is changing the mindset of the adults, proper training for teachers and staff, the people who are working with our kids each and every day. You have to recognize, if somebody wants to become a teacher, they go to these schools of education, rest assured, Mark, they're not being prepared for the Kwamis of the world who are sitting in the back of the room, who may not be motivated. They're not being properly trained in that at all. And so these are the teachers and staff, and so the folk who wind up not prepared, that doesn't mean that they're racist. It just means that they don't know. And so that level of training is something system-wide all across the country that is going to have to happen.
So who's doing that?
As a larger bureaucracy, I don't know that that's happening.
No. I think, but I do think...
part of what's happening is that this is a movement that's growing from the ground up.
Right.
And so schools like Baltimore Collegiate and what we're doing at Eagle Academy, these other schools, we've created a national organization called COSBOC, the Coalition of Schools Educating Boys of Color.
Yes.
It's the work that's happening there across the country in schools like the Ginn Academy in Cleveland and Best Academy in Atlanta and Miller McCoy in New Orleans. This is a movement to save our sons that has been happening all over the country. And the connection one to another of all these different schools is being felt, and it's beginning to rise up in a level where the national government is starting to take notice and be able to draw lessons from these different institutions to say, this is what we need to be able to roll out for the rest of the system.
And Mark, I want to say that black parents have come to us at our family information session. We've talked to over 500 of those families in the city, and they say similarly the same thing, mm-hmm. that their sons are not challenged, that their sons have been labeled troublemakers. And particularly, I would say, the single mothers and the single parents, because they're single grandparents and single grandmothers and uncles and so on, are really frustrated what to do about raising and educating their boys. I think it's more difficult to raise and educate a black male boy today than it was in the time that I was coming up, at the time that David was coming up.
Right.
And I think that's because there are tremendous cultural influences. You can walk into a class of any fourth graders in the city and you say, what do you want to be in life? And they will say, I want to be a football player. I want to be a basketball player. And then my second question to them is, so do you think you have to go to college to become one of those things? And blank faces. And so even if that, I have no problem with aspiring to do that, but I think that this is a profound problem in our society and one that has implications broader than we can even think of, I think.
I have other questions here for the three of you, but let me open the phones here. Folks, what do you think? What are your solutions, ideas? What do you think is going on? And what do you think can change it? Because this, and I'll come back to some thoughts about that, but I really want to know what your thoughts are at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. I saw some callers call in and get impatient, couldn't wait, so they hung up. Please call back, 410-319-8888. Tazwell and Woodlawn, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I enjoyed your show.
Thank you very much.
My comment deals with the delineation between boyhood and manhood. In the Afro-American community, there is no manhood ceremony to actually say that males have graduated. I'm sorry to hear about the declining rate in graduating from high school, but I also found out that there's some misinformation being passed around that if you seek an education, you're trying to act white. And I think that's wrong. Dr. Juana Jukufu wrote a book called Black Boys Can Learn. And then one of the things he points out is don't settle for less than an A in process of getting an education. But I think one of the problems is, as you've already alluded to, the jail seems to be a revolving door because they have not a lot of options to choose from. And it seems like crime is lucrative. That's my comment, and I'll stop talking.
No, that's cool, man. You called in to talk. That's all right. 410-319-8888. So that is true. So the question is, I really want to kind of push this something a little further here that I was thinking about, and what Taz was saying, which all three of you were saying. And I was thinking about this when I was doing our day in history. And when we were talking about the lives of people that we don't even know or think about in the world anymore today, and what that says about us. Well, we talked about Powhatan Beatty, a man who was born enslaved and became a Congressional Medal of Honor winner in the Civil War, and went on to become raise educated children and become a Shakespearean actor in this country in the 19th century. So I started thinking about the kind of great movement that took place after the end of the Civil War, where the formerly enslaved human beings wanted education, and the schools were filled with people from 7 years old to 70 years old joining what would be the first grade so they could learn how to read and write and study Greek and math and more. And then you had our segregated school system. And I said to somebody once, a dear friend of mine, and we were talking about, he went to Douglas High School, graduated in the class of 1940. It was one of our elders. We were sitting and talking one evening, and I said, so how many people were in your class? And he said, I don't know, maybe there were 1,000 kids in the school in Douglas. I'm not sure the exact number. He said, that meant there were thousands of black children who weren't going to high school, because that was the only high school for black children in the metropolitan region of Baltimore in 1940s and 1930s. So, and then you come to the era now, where there's dislocation and deindustrialization and kids thrown into poverty that is somehow, some ways deeper than poverty that existed even 50 years ago, given the dislocation of children in our inner cities. So my question is, what then do we do? I want to know what should be done in terms of this larger push. I mean, the examples you were giving in the schools you're creating and have created are answering some of the questions, but it has to become a systemic solution. Training teachers, changing our system so this works. We're going to be losing thousands and thousands and thousands of children. So I'm curious what you think this push means and where we go. Kimberly, you want to, let me put you on the spot.
Yes, you
my
are
dear
putting
friend,
me
Dr.
on the
Moffitt,
spot.
Moffitt, let you go first before we go to our next caller.
I mean, I think it just as David has already said, that this is a movement that is happening from the ground up, and it's part of the reason why I ended up joining the likes of the Jack Pennells, who saw a vision for creating a space like this for young black boys, is that it's about folks in the community who recognize something that's happening with our children and want to do something about it. Instead of waiting for, like I think we've done in a number of instances, waiting for someone else, you know, within the federal government or the higher-ups or individuals who have the philanthropic ability to contribute, to then see a need and want to contribute to that need. But this is now very much about folks that are a part of the community who see something real that needs to change, because this is an epidemic for our boys, and we want to see a shift and change. And so a lot of us in the community are bubbling up and doing something different about it. And I don't think it needs to just be nothing but Baltimore Collegiates and Eagle Academies or even Urban Preps. I mean, it's got to be a cross-section of different types of programming that reach our boys at different levels. And this is just one of those avenues.
David?
Yeah, I agree. It's ultimately, we've got to impact the boys that go to co-ed schools as well, right? So we've created these single-gender schools where we can really have an intense experience of developing these young men. But at the end of the day, most of our boys are going to continue to go to traditional public schools. They're going to be in co-ed schools. And so we've got to continue to lift up ways in which we're going to do that. One of the things that we're doing at the Eagle Academy is we created these six schools. We're not going to be developing any more schools. Our next area of work is we're creating what we call the Eagle Institute. And within that institute, Mark, we're going to be training schools and school teachers and school systems all across the nation in how to do this work. And not just across the nation, across the world. The challenges of boys of color exist all over the globe. I've had an opportunity to go to the UK and East London and Morocco and Barcelona. Wherever you see boys of color, they are struggling. And so we've had, I can't even begin to tell you, the amount of schools and school districts that have visited us over this last decade from all around the world. And so we recognize that we want to be in the forefront of trying to provide solutions. And in that regard, we recognize we cannot brick and mortar our way out of this educational morass. And so we're going to develop a training system in which school systems and districts will be able to come and learn about what it is that the Eagle Academy is doing. We'll be able to spend time in schools across the country as well. And so we're going to begin to try and share some of the lessons that we have learned.
Let me open the phones here again before we come back to and bring Jack Pennell right back in. 410-319-8888. Let's go to line four. You're on the air. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, I didn't know it was me. I'm calling about the fact that I think far too often we send out negatives about what these kids can or cannot do. And a lot of times it seems like we're almost programming our children, you know, maybe boys especially, that they can't do certain things because of the fact that they're black and maybe because of where they've grown up. Now, I'm much older, like in my 70s, but I raised three sons along with two daughters as a single parent, and they grew up primarily in the projects. And the three boys got through adulthood and are now in their 40s and 50s that are not, I mean, have not been to jail. They have not been to jail. One son hated school, but as soon as he turned 16, he went in the Job Corps. So he got a skill. And now in his 50s, I mean, he's a homeowner. He is, he never got his GED, but he makes more money doing, you know, the things he learned as a result of having a trade than most of his friends that maybe don't have trades. One son went into the Marine Corps. He stayed out of jail, and he is doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. He's also a homeowner. Not a jail. I mean, didn't
right.
go to jail.
Gotcha.
But it was understood that mama wasn't coming to see them while they were in jail. Also, mama did not believe in taking care of grown people. So if there was no school, they had to work. And when they worked, they had to pay rent. So, I mean, right. This is the way they were taught. I have a great-grandson, very smart. He gets into a lot of trouble at home because he's mouthy. But this boy wants to be an accountant. He's very athletic, but he's never mentioned anything about playing sports as a living. An accountant is what he wants to be.
So let me jump to our panel here for a moment, because I think this is and go to Jack Pennell for a moment, just to respond to what the listener is saying and what this says about families. And
well, I think messages do matter. I think messages come to our children from parents, from neighbors, from coaches, from teachers, from a lot of our children. I think that message has to be what I received as a kid. I was simply told, you can do whatever you want.
Right.
And I don't remember anyone ever saying, I'm worried about you going to jail when I was growing up. And I think to even say that to a child, and I'm fearful that sometimes our children are exposed to the criminal justice system at a very early age just by walking down the street. So I think that when we were developing our school, we did study schools, including Eagle Academy. And I mean by study, we spent time in these schools that were successful in developing and educating male students of color who were successful. And success is not always just academic success. It's social success. It's emotional success. It's what I would call the growth mindset. How do we see and develop the mind to show a child, to demonstrate to a child that his mind is like a muscle? And sometimes we see kids who like say, I want to be an accountant, but I can't do that. And when I hear a child says, I can't do something, I stop them. I put my finger on my lips and say, you never need to say that. So it's not enough, I think, just to say, I have an expectation you can be everything in the world. But we also have to support them to do that. And I think that's one thing that our academies will do. I want to mention one other thing to go back to the previous conversation, that I would like to see the Eagle Academy's Baltimore Collegiate School one day be like research hospitals.
Yes, right.
where we actually find out why our boys aren't reading. Because actually, it's not just black boys are not reading. All boys are not reading.
Right.
But the impact for a black boy not to read is greater. It has a huge impact on a child versus a child of another complexion. So so I would like to see, and I think Eagle Academy has opened its doors to people like us to come and see and spend time there, and we walked away with many lessons, and we continue to be in dialogue with people there.
Because I think there's so many examples across the country of schools that do work.
Right.
Yes, do great work.
Do great work.
Yes.
And I think that's why I keep pushing the systemic part of the conversation, because that has to become what you're saying. And I think David Banks said the same thing a moment ago, that these have to be research institutions, places that train and teach and grow a larger movement to change the nature of schooling altogether. Just one quick pedagogical question for both schools here. I'm just curious. One of my friends heads the theater department of School for the Arts, who I worked for a long time, as a dear friend, often talks about you have to look at school education as the three A's and the stool with three sturdy legs. And it's academics, but it's also the arts. And it's also athletics. You can't let one predominate over the other.
Absolutely.
Yes. They have to have a balance if we're going to raise healthy children. And that's what most of our private schools do.
That's what our
private schools are. Right. Every time they talk about reforming public schools, David Banks, I always talk to our CEOs and saying, why don't you just look what the private schools do?
And we did. And we did.
Right?
I want to tell you about, I mentioned that briefly, is that I think there's a preparation gap. So when you go across town to our private schools, there are eighth grade boys learning Algebra 1 in eighth grade. But when you go to most of our schools, it's not an indictment on public city schools, but they're not. There's no expectation they learn eighth grade. I'm worried about that preparation gap. I'm worried about what the book list looks like for a seventh grade boy. Are they reading To Kill a Mockingbird in seventh grade here when they are across town at a private school? And that's the global competition. Not just around the world, that's the local competition,
right.
But then there's a global competition. Are we putting our children on a level playing field? And where's the sense of urgency around that?
Because even if David Banks, even if you don't ever use Algebra 1 again in your life,
right.
it's what it does to your brain to even study it and know it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. It's a discipline of the brain that prepares you just for a level of higher order thinking. And if nothing else, it's what all the other students who are trying to put themselves in the most competitive place, that's what they're studying. And so if that's what they're studying, that's what you ought to be. If you want to be in the game, that's what you've got to do as well. And I agree with your premise, right, this whole notion of this blend and balance between the academic, the athletic, and the arts. I mean, that's what it means to be a fully educated person. And certainly certain students will be drawn more to one than
right.
the other, but they need to be exposed to all of it, and that's what good education looks like.
And I would say that athletics should not be an end, but a means to an end. And I'm surprised right. how often our
Which
schools...
Which used to This is what
it used to be.
That's what
used to be.
That's what they were in schools. That's what athletics
but
were.
But we have schools for fourth grade boys today that have no recesses.
That's right. insane.
And for a fourth grade boy, that is murder.
For any kid. Child.
For any child.
For a 60-year-old man, it's crazy. That's what we call vacation, taking a break, going to a concert.
Steam room.
It's something. Let me get a very quick call in here. We only have like 5 minutes left, and I want to get a closing thoughts from all three of you at 410-319-8888 and tell you where you can meet David Banks here. We just lost our caller, so let's get some closing thoughts. Let me start with you, Kimberly, and go around the room. Kimberly Moffitt.
So again, I think so much of the good work that's being done at the grassroots level is very exciting to me, and that's why I decided to join and be a part of the movement. Because I mean, for in terms of what my family looks like on paper, folks would say all is well, and that this is one of the boys that we don't have to worry about. But I think that's being short-sighted, that just by virtue of what our children are growing up in and what they have access to in terms of social media and media in general means that all of our children are susceptible to a number of things. And so here's an opportunity, or one such opportunity, to be able to really address and deal with our boys on a level that reaches them based on the pedagogy that works for them. And that is why I'm excited about such a program like this and want to see more and more of them, but also want to ensure that there are so many other avenues that we are following to be able to reach our boys and help with their success trajectory.
Jack Pinnell.
First, I want to thank you for being here, and we're very excited about the opportunity to create Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys here. It is a collaboration. It will take a village of people in this community. I do want to say that there are detractors. There are people who are worried and afraid about an all-boys school and an all-boys school where we would be producing young men of color to be successful in life. And for us, the finish line is not a high school diploma, but a college degree, and we've not had a time to talk to that. Three things are important to us. We need engaged students. And when we go to many schools, we don't see boys particularly engaged in learning. We need invested families, and we don't mean we want our families to sell $50 fruitcakes at Christmas. We really want them to be reading to their sons every night, and their sons reading to them. And then finally, we want passionate and highly gifted teachers, which is a harder task than you think, particularly to find males, men of color, to teach in our school. So this coming Sunday at 2 p.m., we will have a family information session, and we've had over 20 or so?
If not more.
And the next one's this coming Sunday at Enid Pratt Library.
Which branch?
At 2 p.m. Downtown.
Downtown, Central branch.
2 p.m., Enid Pratt.
Well, give us that notice, and we'll announce it a couple more times on the air here during the course of the week so people can come down. Thoughts from you, please, David Banks.
Yeah, just to say that, listen, our nation is in trouble. And if we don't recognize that we need to invest in what's happening with our young men, and specifically young men of color, we do that to our own detriment. This is not just a feel-good story, and it'd be nice if people can get involved and to help kind of these little boys that are sitting on the sideline somewhere. That's not what this is at all. This is essentially an issue of national security. This nation can no longer afford to have so much wasted human capital sitting on the sidelines. We've got to recognize people, whether they're in business, even if they don't have any kids in the schools, they've got to recognize that they need to be invested in this issue if our nation is to continue to grow and prosper. This is an increasingly diverse nation, and we've got to make the proper investments in populations like this. Continue to believe in our kids, continue to believe in our families and communities. We need to do the right thing by them. I'm going to be in Baltimore tonight. I'm going to be at the Frederick Douglass Isaac Myers Maritime Museum at 6 o'clock this evening with my book, SOAR, and be sharing some of the stories in SOAR and, you know, why we've been able to have a degree of success with the Eagle Academy.
And that will be at 1417 Thames Street at South Caroline Street, the historic Phillips Point. Frederick Douglass Isaac Myers Maritime Museum tonight at 6 p.m., where you can meet David Banks, President and CEO of the Eagle Academy Foundation, founding principal of the Eagle Academy for Young Men in the Bronx, author of the book SOAR, How Boys Learn, Succeed, and Develop Character. Jack Pinnell has been with us, who is founder of the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys, a new charter school opening here in 2015. He'll be back on the show again to talk more about the school as you reach that time. And we will follow the school very closely. Dr. Kimberly Moffitt on the board of that school, associate professor of American Studies at UMBC, and co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Body Politics, and Africana Communities, and a guest host and co-host here on the Mark Steiner Show. And leave you with a thought here that is on the Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys website, which is the quote from Frederick Douglass that I butchered earlier. I'm going to leave it to you now so it's not butchered, where he said, "It is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." Thank the three of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back, so please don't go away. We have the second hour of the show coming up, talking about our local and state politics, the gubernatorial debate last night, and more.